Welcome to Final Verdict. I'm Bell.
I'm Jamie.
I'm Ploof.
And this episode is explicit. A warning right off the bat.
It's a topic, too.
Yeah,
it's
we'll talk about that. There's some subject matter and song names that are using some harsh language. It's nothing crazy. We're not going to go wild with swearing, but some people don't want to hear about assault, so we're giving you a warning right off the bat. But this week's episode is about records we've never played. Do you guys have many of those?
No, I tend to, when I buy something, I usually open it right away and put it on my record player at least that weekend.
Really?
Yeah, I really like listening to it. Don't get me wrong, I'll play it once and then probably not play it again for like a long time because I have so many records. Mm-hmm. But I try to at least play it once, one, to confirm that it's like an actual decent pressing, and two, just because I want to listen to the album. Like, that's why I bought it.
Wow, I have a lot that I've never played.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
I have a lot that I've never listened to the album at all.
Like, yeah, like you bought it and you're just like, that looks cool.
Yeah, I buy a pre-release of an album that I think I'll like, or whatever. There's a lot that I've never, ever even listened to before, including the one I chose for this week. But I'd say probably like 40% of my collection I've never played once.
Really?
No.
Or maybe I've played maybe once, or a half of it kind of thing. But not usually the whole thing.
Even this one, I bought three albums recently. I bought Live Throwing Copper, I bought Palookaville by Fatboy Slim, and then I bought Days of the News self-titled album, and I haven't listened to any of them yet. And because I wanted to choose both Palookaville and Days of the New at some point in the future, and I don't ever want to choose this album, I thought this would be a great choice for a topic.
Wow, thank you for blessing us with that.
You're welcome.
I do that all the time, though. Sometimes, like, the ones that I choose for the topic are ones that I think I've said that before. Like, they're ones I've never picked for, like, an episode.
Yeah, to be fair, same. Because it's like, you know, you want to spend the whole time about yours, going deep about it.
Yeah.
Or you just want the attention on the album because it's something you like.
Cool.
That maybe
it
doesn't have attention.
I don't think anyone should listen to that Flaming Lips album. I think it's okay.
Yeah, that album was not good. No, that's fair. I feel the same way and kind of did the same thing this time for myself. I picked V by The Horrors, which I'd never listened to. I bought because it looked cool, and I've never listened to it at all.
It sounds cool, too.
We're not going to talk about mine first. Mine will be the third one. The second one we're going to listen to is Ploof's pick. What did you pick?
I chose Throwing Copper by Live, which has a couple of famous songs that were very big in the 90s.
All over you.
All over me. Yeah. The funny thing, Jamie hates this album so much. The funny thing is, it's got a little 25th anniversary edition label on the plastic that I just peeled off. I've literally just opened this for the first time. And it says, featuring Lightning Crashes, I Alone, and Selling the Drama. Surprisingly, doesn't list All Over You, because that was one of the biggest
fourth single.
That was the fourth single. But that's the spoiler alert. There's only like three or four good songs on this whole album.
There sure are.
And they're all grouped together. So that's kind of why I bought it. Was I was like, okay, I can play like the first side and then I'm done. And that's fine because I really like those songs. Everything else is kind of throwaway.
Yeah.
That is always nice, at least when you get a record and
they're all grouped. Like,
Legendarily comes up so often how good one side of AG's EP1 EP2 is. Sometimes it's nice when just one side's good, or Ballads Won by Joji from this season. First side's good. And then we're starting with Jamie's pick. So Jamie, why don't you kick us off? Tell us about what you picked.
I picked Nirvana's In Utero, which is their last album, because a year after this album came out, Kurt Cobain died. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't make any more albums after that.
Yeah, so, you know, no AI generations. No, we found a bunch of mixtapes and put out the album anyways.
Well, they did. They sort of did that. They put out that Incesticide album where it's just like B-sides and stuff that didn't get put out.
I forgot about Incesticide.
And then they put out With the Lights Out, which was their box set, which just has like random like tapes from his garage and stuff like that.
Hell yeah.
And
then, make some money off them.
They found that one song that was ready to be released, and they put that on the Greatest Hits. That was the one, you Know You're Right, that was on their Greatest Hits album, the one that just says Nirvana on the front of it. And then they put out that MTV Live album, which people say is probably one of the better...
Live and Unplugged?
Yeah, Live Unplugged album.
You know what? I was actually mad when Jimmy picked this. I almost picked MTV Unplugged in New York by Nirvana for the albums from our birth years episode.
Yeah.
But I didn't because I felt like there's too much pressure to talk about a band so popular and well-renowned. And now here we are talking about In Utero. But But In Utero is not the best Nirvana album.
No, it stinks. No.
Like, Nevermind is far better.
Yeah.
Unplugged is far better. And I don't know about Bleach, but I know a couple songs that are also far better.
Bleach is, like,
better.
Okay.
Bleach has a great song called School. It's really
good. Yeah, Bleach is another one that's got, like, a few good tracks, kind of like In Utero. And
Bleach is
stand-up.
Way louder, though. That which is interesting, because this one's more of, like, a pop album. Like, it's less hard.
I would not call this a pop album at all.
No, this is a quiet, then loud, then quiet, then loud album.
It's softer than their previous two releases.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did read about a little bit about the album, and there was some points where they switched producers or something like that because they felt the it was already too noisy. And, like, this is what they dialed down to. And I still find it pretty noisy, so.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. I used to be pretty big into Nevermind back in high school. I never realized it was just that album because, I mean, at the time, you're just downloading singles off of LimeWire. But I was nervous to listen to In Utero because, again, the listen to a whole album after listening to singles, I think it was fine.
It's poop.
I think
it was fine because my expectations were pretty low.
The only good songs on this album are the singles. And you can tell that they're the good ones because they sound better than the rest.
Let me guess.
They do. They sound far better than the rest.
Let me guess. It's Heart-Shaped Box.
Yeah, of course.
Rape Me.
Yep.
It's not a good song, but yeah.
And All Apologies.
All Apologies is fantastic. Penny Royalty is also good.
And Penny Royalty and Dumb were also songs.
Oh, I always forget how much I like Dumb. It's a good song. I do like Dumb.
All Apologies.
So good. One of their best songs.
Yeah, ever. Yeah.
Okay,
and I really like "Rape Me." I get that you don't like it.
That's I like "Something in the Way" from
you.
That's a different song.
Something in the way.
Yeah, and then they ruined it for that Batman movie with Robert Pattinson.
Oh, I forgot about that.
It is all over the place. It feels like it's on brand for at least what I imagine Nirvana to be.
Oh yeah.
I never realized that they do. Quiet verse, loud chorus,
We talk about it in the Wikipedia article. Like, it's really dumb.
It happens so every single song.
It was the style of the time.
No, it was the style of Nirvana at the time.
Sure, but then right after that, everyone else did it. Yeah, because
Nirvana was so huge, right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I'll give you that one.
We saw it a little bit in last week's episode. They had a very
similar
thing.
Yeah, sort of.
Like,
yeah, they did it a couple times. You're right. You're not wrong. But that album came out 5 years after this album came out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's how much it changed. Sorry, almost 6 years. Yeah. So.
But yeah, I was not as disappointed as I thought I would be, but I was disappointed because I was like, well, if we're going to talk about it anyways, we should have chosen a good one.
Yeah, never mind.
right. No kidding. Right. This happened to be one that I've never opened. I had no, until about 5 minutes ago where they told me I had to open it, I had no plans on opening it. I bought it because it was on sale what's the Amazon big sale they do every year?
Prime Day.
Prime Day. It was a Prime Day deal, and it was like $15.
That's okay. That's why fair. I would buy In Utero for $15, free shipping.
Yeah, free shipping, $15. Yeah.
I don't think I would.
Wow.
It's not very good. No, it isn't. Yeah.
Because like where does it split? Is it just one LP?
It is just one LP. One,
so probably splits after like Dumb or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's not long. It's only
so like the
41
first
minutes.
Half would be pretty decent. Well, I don't know. It's kind of like they're kind of split up for where the good songs are.
You didn't tell me. I had to look online.
Yeah, no, all good. All right. Because like, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll get into it in tracks. So I won't go too far into it. But yeah, it's kind of split for like where the good songs are. I don't feel like there's one really great song.
No.
Or side, sorry.
No, the both sides are equally mediocre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I know it sounds like I'm down on it, but even when I was growing up and I was really into Nirvana, I was not into this album. I was into like two of the songs from this album.
Sure.
And I think most of my favorite stuff is on their greatest hits album.
Oh, but their greatest hits goes hard.
Yeah, their greatest hits is like 15 songs, and they picked literally the best songs that they have.
That's why the acoustic Live and Unplugged is so good.
Yeah, it's just their best songs.
It's just their
played
best
really
songs.
Uniquely.
Yeah.
And then
like six songs that aren't theirs. They played
Lake of
a bunch of Meat Puppet songs. Yeah.
Meat Puppets.
Let's see where the split.
So you were a big fan. How did you get into Nirvana?
How did I get into Nirvana? I was just I was interested in them. I bought the CD at a Future Shop.
Were they alive when you were into them? This is not like an age thing, but like
no.
Because you would have been young at the time, I guess.
Well, yeah, when Kurt Cobain died, or when
I guess you would have been like, what, seven, six?
I was six. Yeah. I was six when Kurt Cobain died. So my parents were not listening to this kind of music. I'm sure my parents saw them come on, like, you know, like at the part of the news where entertainment comes on. They're like,
David Letterman.
Oh, man, I don't think my parents stayed up late enough to watch David Letterman. But when they talk about like entertainment news, they're probably like, who the hell was that? You know, because they weren't listening to that kind of music, and that's fine. But once I got into high school, and like grade 8, grade 9, high school, that era, I started getting into music because being able to download things came out. Yeah. So I didn't have to wait for them to play them on the radio.
LimeWire and Kazaa and whatever else you might have wanted to use
I'm
as a
so
child.
Old.
They would have been Napster?
No, I didn't. I never dabbled in Napster, but I played with one called Morpheus, which is a fork.
I remember Morpheus.
Morpheus is like, yeah, of the Grokster type download. So it's a fake Napster. Well, it's like a fork of Napster.
Yeah.
God, oh
my, I never used it. My buddy's friend, or no, my buddy's older sister used Morpheus. I'm pretty sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah, Music City Morpheus is fine software. And you know, I have many MP3s from that era. I had an MP3 player that had 12 songs. That could hold 12 songs. It was 32 megs.
I think my first one was like 64 and it could do like 30 tracks.
Yeah, if you cranked them down real low. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. What a time.
So mine hold 32 megs. So I could get like X amount of songs on there, usually like 10, 9 maybe.
Yeah, depending on song length
and
quality.
And I would like regularly change it up, but that's how I got into listening to Nirvana. I was like, I wonder what Smells Like Teen Spirit is. It sounds like, because like Bill Nye did the fake Smells Like Teen Spirit on the one episode of Bill Nye the Science Guy. And then Weird Al did Smells Like Nirvana, and I knew what those sounded like, but I didn't know what Smells Like Teen Spirit sounded like.
It's pretty much the exact same for me. Was around high school or middle school when I started downloading music. And I knew, like, I'd seen, you know, Nirvana posters, and my sister is a little older, so she had Nevermind, I think. And, you know, so I listened to, like, Polly and a couple other
Polly's good
softer song. Tracks, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is pretty good. And so I downloaded, like, their more popular songs. And then I think Heart-Shaped Box was on Guitar Hero 2.
Yeah. Two or three, one of those.
Yeah, and so that kind of like sparked another big Nirvana craze at the time. But yeah, for me, it was mostly just downloading their greatest hits through singles on like LimeWire or
Kazaa. I went into a future shop one day and they had the CDs that are on for like $10.
Yeah.
And one of them was Nirvana's like greatest hits album, just called Nirvana. And it's pretty good. I think I have it over there somewhere.
Yeah. But.
Yeah, it's funny how we all kind of got into them at the same time.
Yeah.
It just would have been different years. Yeah. Because for me, it was also like grade 8 and middle school. But for me, it was just like kind of getting into music for the first time, like more seriously, and seeing Nirvana posters and t-shirts and being like, okay, like, what is this? And then listening to it, and it's like kind of edgy. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
this is kind of cool.
It's
but I only listened to some of the hits, like All Apologies, Come As You Are, and those other ones.
It is kind of edgy, but a lot of what they're singing about, it's kind of mild by today's standards. Mm-hmm. Like what we would have considered edgy in 1992 or 3 is somehow much less.
Well, even just playing in the style of music that they did at the time,
yes,
was very different. Because punk, and I mean, it's not punk, it's like grunge, but like harder stuff was not
it's
mainstream.
Not, yeah, it's not metal.
Yeah.
And it's not punk.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in between.
Yeah. And
but it's also like a weird
garage
nebulous,
rock.
Yeah, it's this weird nebulous thing, like whatever alternative is.
Yeah, yeah. And it got popular, whereas a lot of those other genres like never got super mainstream popular, or at least not until later on.
Yeah, he's singing about good stuff. Like it's against assault, or
totally.
It's against, you know, even when it's like anti-establishment, it's usually like abuse of that power.
Yeah.
It's just the way it's being sung makes it seem like it's something crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's talking about the weight of fame. He's talking about how people called him and his wife bad parents. You know.
Yeah, he's seeing stuff on the news and he's like, why? Like, why is this being said about me? Or why am I being watched like this?
Yeah. Why should I be judged like this? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of his problem was that people kept calling him the voice of a generation, and he was not ready for that, nor did he want that.
Yeah, he... I mean, allegedly, like, Kurt had a lot of heroes in the music scene, and it wasn't his style of music. Like, he liked a lot of older stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
their success was part of the reason Neil Young did an album with Pearl Jam.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you listen to reviews interviews with Kurt Cobain, he cites, like, Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World as, like, a turning point for him and stuff like that.
Yeah, he quotes Neil Young in his suicide note.
Yeah. Better to burn out than fade away. Yeah.
Yeah. Which then people were like, no, it's better to live your whole life. And Neil Young's like, nah. He stood by it even after that. He's like, nah, it's kind of cool.
Nah, burnout.
Burnout. Yeah, I think it's an interesting era. Obviously, we're not going to go fully into it on this topic because we have so much to go through. But I think looking up who he was is pretty interesting, and how his death affected so many people and stuff like that was a really interesting little journey for me as somebody who just, like, casually listened, you know, however many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed like a very interesting dude. And it's too bad the way things ended, but
he was very well read. I didn't realize that until after it. So Francis Bean? No, sorry. Francis Farmer will have revenge on Seattle.
Francis Bean's daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of these albums. Oh, Scentless Apprentice is about a book.
Yeah. About this perfume maker who's like a murderer.
And he reached out to a very famous author, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. And he ended up collaborating just before he died with this, like, very... William S. Burroughs.
Oh.
He collaborated with him. He asked him to appear on this album. He said no. And then he ended up collaborating with him on something else.
That's pretty cool.
But yeah, he was very well read. And it doesn't always come across in his lyrics. Sometimes the lyrics are very simple, but... I just found it fascinating that he was interested in stuff, you know, like, you know, literature and things like that. You don't get that impression from him.
There wasn't as much to do back then.
Yeah, it wasn't on TikTok. Yeah,
there's no internet.
Right? Like, yeah. I feel like more people were internet. Just more well-read in the, like, 70s, 80s, and 90s, because while TV had started to kind of take off, there also wasn't that much to watch on TV.
Other than Seinfeld.
No, like, there was, like, one or two shows, right, yeah, that everyone watched, and then the rest was kind of news or junk.
Kurt Cobain
should have
gone on Seinfeld.
that would have been wild.
I agree. He's a very smart guy, but let's get right into it so we can keep on.
Yeah, we got three albums.
Yeah, we got some three albums to talk about today. Hey, wait.
Serve the Servants.
It's apparently a song about how Kurt Cobain didn't get along with his father.
Cool.
I didn't get that from the lyrics.
Me either. But
yeah,
okay.
It's a solid start to the album, the way that this is a classic Nirvana song.
Yep.
Like, it sounds like a lot of Nirvana songs.
Got a riff.
I'm not a huge fan of the verses, but I like the choruses, and the solo around 2:15 is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's
the basic drums on it. So the drums aren't very, like, Dave Grohl is not playing.
Yeah, he's a very good drummer.
Yeah, so he's not playing.
This is very basic.
Yeah, this is a very basic drum line. And it's interesting. I thought it was pretty good that he was just playing, like, no frills beats. On
Sometimes that's the way to do it, you know, tone it down. And
that's why Ringo only played basic beats.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's why, right?
Yeah.
That's why.
Let's go with that.
What are your thoughts, Bloof?
I don't have much. Serve the Servants is okay. Most of this album, I like the hits, and maybe one or two extras, like Dumb. And aside from that, it's fine. I love Nevermind. I don't really like In Utero that much. So most of these tracks, I'm not going to have a ton to say.
Mm-hmm. What about Scentless Apprentice? I like the drums that start off the song. I'm not as big of a fan of the screeching guitar that joins in with them during the intro, but they're not awful. But I really don't like the screaming chorus.
Yeah.
I really don't like it.
I wrote that down,
too. It's obviously very unsettling, and it's supposed to be because it's about a murderer. But Kurt's mic also peaks because he's screeching so loud.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool song, but I don't want to listen to it because of that. Like, the lyrics are cool. They're creepy. But it's just so loud and abrasive that it's like, this is not meant for listening.
That's kind of most of the songs I don't really like. It's either abrasive or not necessarily aggressive, but awkward or weird. and I'm not crazy about it.
Yeah, this is the one that was about the
Burroughs?
the freaking perfume maker who has no body scent and murders people to put like their blood into perfumes to create new scents or something like that.
Yeah.
The song kind of goes through it, and it is, again, very interesting.
The novel is apparently very good.
Yeah, I would like to read it. He read it in high school, and it left such an impact on him that he wrote a song about it.
He used to carry it with him.
So
yeah, very
weird. One day I'll check it out. I'm not going to. Don't hold me to that.
Don't hold you to that. Heart Shaped Box.
Oh my God.
What a surprise. It was one of the singles.
Banger. Yeah. Iconic riff to start the song. I love the calm verses with the loud, but not too loud. I'm looking at you, Sinless Apprentice chorus. No idea what the lyrics mean, but they're very striking and mysterious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still don't know if it's about Courtney Love or not.
Could be about anything.
Yeah, she's like, I gave him a heart-shaped box. Yeah. And she's like, nah, it's about my lady parts.
Right.
And it's like, okay.
It's okay, sure, whatever.
Courtney Love is an unreliable narrator.
She very much is.
Never listen to Courtney Love if you want a straight answer, especially if it's about that. Also, it's really creepy how their daughter just dates people who look like Kurt Cobain now.
Does she?
Yeah.
Doesn't everyone always date their parents or whatever?
God, I hope not.
I don't know. My girlfriend does not look like my mom.
Well,
you've never seen my mom.
But I've seen Boomika.
You sure have.
The name should give away that she does not look like Poof's mom.
This is one of the singles from the album. It was number one on the MTV music chart for 4 straight weeks.
That's not surprising. So good.
It is very, very good.
Oh, I don't know.
I like the solo around 245. It's only 15 seconds long, though.
Yeah, it's a long song.
Yeah, it's
almost 5 minutes.
4 minutes and 41 seconds. Does not feel like it.
No.
But I feel like in that amount of length, he probably could have had a longer solo, and I would have enjoyed it. Because he is a very good guitar player.
Yeah.
It's just kept pretty basic for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But very, very, very good song. After that,
we got
Rape Me. Yeah, when I was a teen, I would skip this song every time.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, it's about assault, and that's no joke, and it's obviously something to be taken seriously, so it's probably a good thing that the song is challenging to listen to.
He said it's...
But, it's not nice.
It's not in the notes, but he came out in an interview and said it's not about that. It's about the way the press treats me.
No, it's not. He has come out and said people didn't understand that Polly was an anti-rape song, so I made this so that people know that it's about rape.
So there's two different notes on this one then.
Oh, yeah, because I read it was like I'm being very blunt about how this is something that needs to be prevented.
Oh, wow.
Because Polly was about it as well, but people were just
that
like...
That was about a girl gets kidnapped, though.
Polly wants a cracker.
Yeah. So you didn't get it, so I made this song for you.
Yeah. I really like how aggressive it is. It always just kind of drove that point home. So maybe this song was for me, and I needed to be hit over the head with that message. I don't know.
Despite its name and its content, it was a double A-side with All Apologies. So it was a single. It was released as a single with All Apologies. So they were both listed as A-sides. So
to
whichever
be fair, it is. Well produced,
competent,
and other than the subject matter, it is a good song. Like enjoyable listen, I should say.
Yeah. The riff is really good.
It's fantastic,
and the bass is good.
Yeah. Drums are really good.
Even his singing when he's saying like "Rape me, rape," like it's really solid. Yeah,
it's solid vocals captured very well.
Yeah,
yeah. I like the breakdown at 145 where it's just Kurt and one guitar with the fuzzy guitar quietly playing in the right speaker before everything comes crashing back in.
Yeah,
before the final chorus. And the bridge is also, I think, a good kind of change up while staying on kind of brand with the rest of the song. Like, it doesn't branch out too much. It's a good but challenging song.
Mm-hmm. Frances Farmer will have her revenge on Seattle.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. It's okay.
I like this subdued intro with Kurt's vocal being super clear, but I don't feel like the song stands out and would probably be a skip. It just kind of like is.
It's there. Okay. I've listened to it a bunch of times over the years. I'm not sure why. It's about the actress of the same name. She was involuntarily committed many times throughout her life.
Is it why Frances Bean is his daughter's name?
No idea. They both Courtney Love and Kurt Cobain were huge fans of Frances Farmer for whatever reason, and the wedding dress that she wore. At their wedding was one of Frances Farmer's dresses. No idea why.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The song is perfectly okay.
Yeah.
And then we get to Dumb, which is the last song on side A.
I finally looked it up
for you.
I feel like this is a better version of Francis Farmer. Like, it's got a similar beat and pace, but it's got strings.
Sort of similar riff, too.
Yeah, yeah, it feels very, very similar.
It's got a little cello part.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's super memorable.
No, it's really not.
It is, like, when it comes on, I'm like, oh, this is good.
I always forget about Dumb, but it is definitely one of the more standout tracks from In Utero. It's just not one of the, like, really good ones, like All Apologies or,
Surprise, it's my favorite song in the whole album.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think it's really good.
It's fine.
It's like a hidden gem.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, apparently, Frances, Kurt's daughter, does not like Nirvana, but every time she listens to this song, she cries.
Mm.
I was like, huh.
Mm.
It's good. It feels raw. It just, I just don't remember it's there ever, but again, when it comes on, it's good.
So we get into Very Ape. Nirvana has a song called Verse, Chorus, Verse, which appears on I don't know, one of their box sets or whatever. And it's basically this song, but this song is very verse, chorus, verse. And it does that loud, quiet, loud thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. Not a huge standout.
I don't like it.
It's just more, like, I even have my notes, just more of the classic quiet verse, loud chorus structure.
Yeah.
It's short and it kind of just goes by.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then we get into Milk It, and they do the same thing again.
Yep.
What is a doll steak?
I don't know.
Christ, I don't know.
I like the loud, punchy chorus, but I was like, huh, what's a doll steak? Like the last songs, there's nothing standout. I would never go out of my way to put this on.
No, absolutely not.
I don't like the name. Milk It.
Penny doll Royal steak. Tea. My second favorite song on the whole album.
Really?
I don't like Penny Royal Tea that much either. This is a good song, but second favorite?
I basically don't like side two except for All Apologies.
I like Penny Royal Tea. I think it's good. The chorus is catchy. And the poetic lyrics don't mean a whole lot, but to me at least. I think they flow really well and got my head bobbing.
Mm-hmm.
It has a short solo. But again, I wish that they were longer than like 15 to 30 seconds because I think that's pretty solid. But this song like pulled me back into the album.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I guess this isn't a good album. And I was like, oh, okay, like this is decent.
I have very bad posture. It does it for me. I don't know why. I think it's just a dumb line.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh man, me too, dude.
Yeah.
You're also on warm milk and laxatives.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That's something a heroin addict would do.
Mm-hmm.
This is slated to be a single for the album to be released the day that Kurt Cobain shot himself in the face.
All right, let's keep it less aggressive there, buddy.
And then they didn't put it out.
Yeah.
Cool.
Copies of the single that made it out into the wild are worth tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I wouldn't look for it. It's just okay, though.
Radio friendly
unit shifter. It's not.
It's really not.
We've heard Jamie say call songs radio friendly unit shifters before, so I was like, hey.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I do it.
That's the joke.
I also wrote this song is definitely not one.
It's funny because like the first bit is garbage, but then it turns into like okay.
It's very abrasive.
Yeah,
and then it's like a punky rock beat.
Yeah,
after that.
Yeah. Like it's I don't hate the last two thirds of the album, but the intro is just awful.
Yeah, it's really off putting.
It's very long too, because there's just like screeching. It's over like almost a minute long.
Yeah.
But the rest of the song after this is a little bit one note for me, and it goes on for too long.
Sure.
Like if it was 2.5 to 3 minutes. I'd be like, that's solid. Yeah. It's almost five minutes long.
This is a protest against Geffen Records' request for them to put out more singles.
Yeah.
More singles.
Yeah. Radio-friendly unit shifters.
Yeah. Of course, a radio-friendly unit shifter is a song that can be played on a radio and sell many copies of an album.
So like, let's make it too long and hard to listen to.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's the joke.
And then they start Tourette's with more screeching.
Yep.
This one, though, not bad. It's a short and sweet punk song.
Yes, it has a sound of reminiscent of, but not exactly, of hardcore punk.
It's okay. I think, like, at this point, that's not what I want from Nirvana. I think that's my only issue. I want, like, Polly, Dumb, All Apologies, Heart-Shaped Box. I don't like it when they're going, like, super hard, which is weird, because I do tend to like harder, faster stuff.
Sure.
And then All Apologies, my favorite song on the album.
Song stinks.
It's amazing.
You're crazy.
Why don't you like All Apologies?
Song stinks.
Oh my God.
Such a troll. Don't get blogged. Yeah, the production value was so high, yeah, with every instrument and vocal track being so crisp, the low hum of strings in the background, oh, with, yeah, violins coming every so often, and the guitar riff is so iconic. It's another song where I was like, I have no idea what Kurt is saying or what it means, but it sounds so good.
Yeah. It's a great track.
The outro verse is over a minute and a half long, with it just being "all in all is all we are" repeated, but somehow it works perfectly.
Yeah, especially at the end of the album.
Yeah, it is a great end to the album, and almost makes the last chunk of the album we're sitting through. Almost.
Almost.
Almost. Why don't you like it, Jamie?
It doesn't do anything for me. When I was in high school, it wasn't popular to play... What's that Oasis song? Wonderwall. It wasn't on guitar.
Today is going to be the day.
It was All Apologies. People would play the guitar picking from that song instead of that. And now I don't like that song, because I've heard too many bad versions of some kid in his basement playing All Apologies.
Yeah.
Anyway, the song's, it's fine. It's whatever.
Dude, I wish I was like you. Easily amused.
Yeah, right?
That's a lyric to the song. Got him.
I thought the interesting thing about this album and then Pluth's pick was that they're both recorded at the same studio, which is Pachyderm in Minnesota.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get into...
Yeah, we made Jamie open it, so tell us about the record.
Oh, God. I regret opening this. I could have sold it as sealed.
For $15?
Yeah, whoa.
$30? Wow. I could have doubled my profit.
I was going to say, that's 100%. Yeah. That's profit. Tell us about the cover.
It's one of those exploded views of the human body like you would see at a medical institute. Yeah,
it's like a medical doll, like mannequin.
Yeah, it's like a mannequin. And it's got wings.
It is a pretty iconic cover.
It says Nirvana at the top in the Nirvana font.
And then In Utero in the In Utero font.
In a different font. And then in the back, it's cool. Got this nonsense.
It looks like the Uarapaya back.
Sure, it's got one of those.
Look it up.
I'm not looking that up.
Jamie, pull that up.
Jamie pulled that
up. It's got random icons like a crazy person.
Yeah, it's got a whole bunch of... It looks like there's a fried chicken on the back.
Looks like one of those spy books.
Yeah.
Just all in one color.
Anyway, it's... Just like the album, the cover is very one note. Then the inner sleeve has pictures of the band.
Whoa, look at the bottom left one.
And then... I don't know who that is. That's a... Kurt Cobain dressed up as a lady? I don't know. I can't tell. And then on the back, you get some more pictures of the band and some lyrics. Looks like the whole album. It's got the special thanks, the mixing credits, all that fun stuff. That's it. And then you get a heavy grain vinyl release. It is black. Congratulations.
What about the labels? You got to pull it out, man. I'm making you open it all the way up.
It's stuck. It's so stuck to it.
That's There's how no new way it you're is. Getting $30.
That's how new it is, Jamie.
It's black. Congratulations.
Black label. Black label society. BLS.
What?
What's on the other side of the label?
More black.
I want Jamie to take it all the way out.
I don't even look at this.
Well, Pluth, why don't you start with your vinyl verdict, because Jamie's got to put that away.
Okay. I like Nirvana. I'm not crazy about In Utero, aside from a few songs. I think the whole album itself is like a 6, maybe a 6.5 out of 10. That's basically it. I think some of it's a little offensive, especially, like, I like Rape Me, but it's definitely a really offensive to listen to song. And then they have a lot of their more kind of counterculture stuff on here, which was, like, always there, but this one feels really heavy without as many big hits. And so I would never pick it. Like, if I had to pick a Nirvana song to listen to, I would either pick Nevermind or I'd probably pick, Live in New York.
Sure. I picked their greatest hits album.
Sure.
Then you get all the good ones.
Sure.
Well, tell us what you think of this album.
Oh, interesting. You want me to go before you?
Sure. There's no set order.
There's no set order?
No, we
scramble every time. Oh, this is free form. Yeah. It was like
We've
jazz.
Never had a set order.
This album is fine. It's not my favorite Nirvana album. You could probably tell because I haven't unpacked it. It has a couple of songs that I'm very fond of, a couple of songs I'm less fond of, and a bunch of songs that I'm not fond of at all. like, I understand the part that they played in music of the 90s and shaping it. And I also know that their absence in the later half of the 90s made other groups succeed.
Totally, yeah.
And we'll get into that with Ploof's pick.
We sure will.
And then a pick from one of my picks from a couple weeks from now. It succeeded because Nirvana wasn't there to pollute the airways. But I give this album maybe like a 7 out of 13.
Sure.
It's fine. It's whatever.
That's crazy. I thought I was going to be a hater. So I guess take my final verdict that I've pre-written with a grain of salt. After listening to In Utero, I think I probably should have beaten Jamie to the punch and either chosen MTV Unplugged for that episode last season or picked Nevermind, because now I feel like I may be perceived as a hater of one of the most popular grunge bands of all time. I think Nirvana as a whole has some crazy good hits, but their standard style of quiet verse and loud chorus really started to wear, and Kurt has some great guitar solos that frequently got cut short and left me wanting more. I'm putting In Utero by Nirvana in the 25th spot under Deja Vu by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and above You Void Synthesizer by Machine Girl. If you cut out like five of these songs, seven of these songs,
it's a great EP.
It'd be a banger EP. But I think the second side just isn't strong enough to keep me engaged. If you haven't listened to Nirvana before or listened to them seriously, definitely check out Nevermind. I went and listened to it after listening to this. I think it's a more balanced and complete package compared to In Utero. And if I had chosen it, probably would have been top 10 in my season so far. It is very, very good. This was an album.
Yeah, you know
what else is an album? Ploof's pick, tell us more.
It sure is an album. It's Throwing Copper by Live. It was a big album in the 90s with a few big tracks.
Released exactly 1 year?
Released in 1994. This one has three extra songs, and the funny thing is, since I never opened it, I don't think any of us made notes for the last three songs, so it's actually longer than an hour, is great, because, it was already long.
Come up with your own feedback on those last three songs, because we're not reviewing them, because we did not listen.
I bought this album for three reasons, maybe four or five. The Dammit Otter Creek, Lightning Crashes, and I Alone. Selling the Drama is okay, too. The rest is kind of whatever, and it's the only album from Live that I even like.
Yeah, so why'd you buy this?
This is their fourth album.
I know. Yeah, it's not their first album. They made one or two more after it, I think, as well, right?
I mean, four more albums.
Four more, Jesus.
Why buy this if you only like a couple songs?
Because it wasn't expensive. It's got this really weird art, this cover art, that I just like love for some reason.
All the singles have weird art, too.
Do they?
If you look at the
I never looked at the singles. I also just like really like those songs I listed. They were constantly on my MP3 player, along with other songs like from Nirvana or other bands from the 90s or early 2000s. And so I've listened to I Alone, All Over You, Lightning Crashes, like hundreds of times probably. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of wanted, it was the nostalgia factor, 100%. I saw it for the 25th anniversary edition and I was like, yeah, sure.
Let me tell you something, Ploof. Live is the music that they play before Tanner Zipchin comes on at the Cineplex.
Yeah.
It's just that mindless, it doesn't matter music.
Totally.
That is a reference I don't understand. But I put it on and I was like, I scrolled to the bottom to see the length of the album. I was like, Ploof is going to get all of his choices vetted by us, because I was like, this is so long.
Hey, this is my long album choice.
Your third, maybe. Oh, my goodness.
Well,
this is a CD-length album released on an LP. It's all of his picks.
Double LP.
You know what? It may surprise you, but I've never listened to Live before. I didn't know what to expect.
I'm not surprised.
It's not bad. It's not the right time for me to listen.
Sure.
Like last week's, I was like, I think I just like other music from this era, and funnily enough, it'll come up. This also sometimes reminds me of Our Lady Peace, which came up again in last week's episode.
Sure, yeah.
And I think I would have liked this if I listened to it 10 to 15 years ago, like when I was a young teen.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't listened to so much of Our Lady Peace and other 90s bands that I was like, I was again over it, or kind of had that preference set.
Yeah.
Because this is... got a lot of tropes, even in like how he sings with like the
totally, yeah.
And it's like, this is from the mid 90s. Like, that makes sense. But I don't think it was that bad.
I don't think it's I really do like those like four songs quite a bit. Like, I hold them all very highly. The album, and even the Dammit Otter Creek, I love the way the album starts. But yeah, I kind of agree with Jamie. I don't necessarily hate it as much as he does, but I do think most of it is kind of
hate is a strong word. I just find it. Its time has ended.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I don't know if it gets a lot of airplay on radio stations that play 70s, 80s, 90s music.
Yep. Yeah, it was very the hits were huge. Very popular.
Yeah, it was very popular. Yes. Yeah. Almost inexplicably, because their previous album didn't land. Album before that didn't land.
Nope.
Where did this album come from? I don't know. Yeah. Nobody knows. This album was produced by Jerry Harrison of the Talking Heads. I thought that was
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Love the Talking Heads. Yeah. I didn't know that.
But yeah. That was my fun fact for this. That, and it was recorded at the same studio as in Europe.
Yeah. But yeah, I was just buying albums off Amazon, and I was like, oh, yeah, there's another one that I could just
Did what I did that one week.
Add to the pile. Yeah.
I couldn't get the one album, so I just bought more albums that almost equaled the cost of that.
Yeah, so I just found a few on Amazon that I was like, oh, I want this one, I want this one, I want this one. I didn't feel like going to the store. And that was there, and it was an option, and I said, oh, yeah, sure. I like a few of those tracks. Why not? I remember that one from when I was a teenager.
Yes, so, when I was a youth.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure my dad had the CD, so it was in his CD shelf. Yeah,
your dad seems like a cool guy.
So.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He's got a lot of good music.
Yeah, he was cool.
I have told him that when he passes, I would like his record collection.
I also told him that.
Dang, well, I'm getting it first.
I said, or else at the end.
So or else. Give it to me. Or else you die early.
Well, why don't we give one last listen?
Sure. That's a long one. My eyes in place of facing me. Pick me up, put me on the ground. Starts with the Dam at Otter Creek. I really like the slow burn start. I like the
oh my god, that's my first note too. It's a bit of a slow burn.
Yeah,
but I did say me likey.
I like the whole the Dam at Otter Creek and all the water backed up. Like, I don't know, I think it's good. I like the voice effects they do. The whole thing takes a while to get going, but the second half is really strong. It's got that big climax at the end, and then it's got a long fade out that didn't have to happen.
Well, it starts with a fade in and then it fades out.
I'm okay with the fade in because, like I said, I'm okay with the slow burn, but like that the fade out, I don't think it was needed to be there.
No.
Yeah.
This is where I noted that I hate Ed Kowalczyk's voice.
Oh, yeah?
This quick, hey?
Yeah.
Really? I actually...
First song, you're nah.
Yeah, I like his voice on the Dam at Otter Creek.
No, that's okay.
It's not for
They're everybody. Dumping a body, though. That's something I can
get. Yeah, by. It's like it's weird lyrics. It's cool. And I don't know.
And it gets more frantic as the song goes on.
Yeah, exactly. Because
they can't find a place to get rid of the body, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, deep enough to dive.
Yeah.
Then we get Selling the Drama. I think it's got a great pre-chorus, but a very ugly chorus.
I am not a huge fan. Well, this song is all right. I'm not a huge fan of all the religious talk and the usage of the word rape. Again,
so they talk about religion a lot on this
album. A lot.
Yeah,
so much. I didn't realize that.
But it almost feels like faux. I don't know if it's like mysticality or this anti-religion. Like, it's really hard to tell. They're just like saying religious things.
Yeah, he's
kind of like, what is it?
Remember the Virgin Mary?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm like, okay. Like,
remember Buddha?
That's somebody in the Bible.
He's come out and said that, like,
Jonah and the Whale,
it's not a Christian song. It's not a Christian rock album. I don't know. There's definitely like a good two or three songs that I'm like, okay, well, it's like,
there's a lot of religious.
And it's not positive or negative. It's just like said.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's okay.
It just references. Remember John the Fisherman?
Yeah.
Other than that, it feels like a standard rock song. It could be Jars of Clay. It could be Matchbox 20. It could be anybody from this era.
Yeah.
Like, it just is a song.
I remember the song getting radio play. It didn't get as much radio play as the other ones.
No, but it was there.
But it was a single.
Yeah.
The song had like six singles, and only like three of them hit as hard as, you know, is getting into the top 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
This album sold millions of copies.
It was very
inexplicably.
It was very popular at the time.
It's a 15 or 16 track album.
Yeah.
With four good songs. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think the rest are just like okay enough.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, hey, I bought it for the singles. Like,
100%. Imagine you were sitting there, and so this album came out in 1994.
Yeah.
So this album is sort of like Marcy Playground, where it, like people like the one single.
Yeah.
So they must have sold a bunch because they want someone really like Lightning Crashes or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Honestly. Yeah.
I know we're sort of looking back on this, like laughing at people back then because we're in 2024 and this album was released 30 years ago. Or wait, is that right?
Yeah. 30 years ago.
30 years ago. Oh, that's scary. but it's just one of those things where like, what were people doing?
There wasn't as much music back then and grunge was still kind of new.
Yeah. This is less grungy, more alternative.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not as hard as like Nirvana or some other grunge bands at the time. And
absolutely, this album succeeded because Nirvana wasn't there to fill the gap.
Exactly, because we just mentioned In Utero was 93, and then Kurt Cobain was gone.
They had just about finished touring for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then this album came out in like June.
Yeah.
So
it just kind of filled a void, and a few tracks were really good standout hits. That's pretty much it.
Anyway, we're getting into I Alone.
Yeah, this is
also a single.
This is a very Christian song. It's an adaptation of Luke 8:22-25. This is basically why some people have called live Christian rock.
Same with Creed.
Sure, yeah.
Creed is good.
I don't like Creed. I don't like Creed at all.
We're going to choose Creed someday.
Bell's going to choose Creed.
You take me higher?
This song has a fun chorus.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like the song has a huge draw. Like, it doesn't feel unique or especially good lyrically or instrumentally. The production value is high, and I like the backup vocals, but they're buried pretty deep. That kind's a good thing. But it just kind of, like, again, feels like a song.
Yeah.
Having two religious songs back-to-back is a weird choice, too. Or like religious themed songs. They're not explicitly religious.
There's a bunch of theme on. When did what's her face rip up the picture of the Pope?
Sinead O'Connor. It was like 92 or 93.
So it was like still like this. The church was being like starting to be talked about in kind of a negative light from some people. And I think that's kind of why they didn't go too heavily into the negativity, but they also weren't like sitting there praising it or 1994, anything.
1994, wasn't that the year that they raided the Branch Davidian compound in Waco?
Oh, is it?
I think so.
That's the Waco Texas massacre, isn't it?
Yeah, they burned the building down by Oopsie. Or did they?
That's wild.
And then What's His Nuts was so mad that he did that, he blew up the Oklahoma City building the next year.
Yeah. I think it's catchy. Otherwise, it's just kind of, mid-90s song. I'm not crazy about the bridge a little over halfway through. Reminds me of something Pearl Jam would do. Takes forever to end. It's okay. I like the chorus quite a bit, and that's like about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I Alone does the quiet versus loud loud chorus of the Nirvana thing.
Yeah,
sure does.
Then we
Iris.
Get Iris, one of the less popular songs.
Not the one by the Goo Goo Dolls, though.
No.
I wish it was one by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Wow, I haven't heard the Goo Goo Dolls in forever.
I like the initial strum that kicks off the song.
Yeah.
The drums and bass are solid. No idea what the lyrics mean, but I like the harmonies and the harsh, growly vocals.
Yeah, I like the energy on this one quite a bit.
And I'd give up forever to touch you.
Would you?
That's you're quoting the Goo Goo Dolls.
Oh, sorry, wrong one again.
Yeah,
I like the second half of the song quite a bit. So they're doing more quiet part, loud part, quiet part. The rest is kind of whatever. It's the song before the Lightning Crashes. Yeah, the drums are good. I think the drums are like fine across pretty much this whole album. Sometimes they're a little more exceptional than others, but yeah, it's kind of mostly instrumentation. Lightning Crashes is like a 10 out of 10 great song for me. I love it. Jamie hates it. I think it's got a cool chorus, interesting lyrics. I think the only thing wrong with it is the ending. It goes on for like way too long.
It starts out of Phase, which is weird.
Oh, God. Phases like never work for me.
Yeah.
So it's just like,
really? Oh, I love it. I love the start.
It starts out of Phase and his vocals sound like they're in another room. And then it just takes too long to get to the good part.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I like it when things start to pick up around the 3-minute mark. Yeah. And the little instrumental break is good, but I feel like the slow parts of the song are just saying words that sound like they're deep but don't mean a whole lot. It's cheesy in a way like they're writing a Christian rock song, which again, it's just like, why?
Yeah.
You're just saying things. What does it mean? And then I read that they're like, we have this music video. So I was like, start watching it, and they're like, but it doesn't mean what you think it means. We messed up the music video. I'm like, okay, buddy. And then I turned it off.
Yeah.
So it's, like, this is dumb.
It's about just like the juxtaposition of life and death, I think.
It's like, yeah, someone could be dying in the next room when someone's being born. Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? And I go, no.
No.
My grandma's dead. I don't care about the new baby.
And then we get into Top, which mentions Hitler and is very short.
Yeah, I said, I do not
know. It comes out of nowhere, too. I was like, what?
Yeah, right? I said, I do not know what he's saying with the Hitler in a robe of truth. My emptiness has built your altar line. I have no idea what he's referencing.
It's funny because I was like, this is a tight song in the way that it's only 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Yeah. Everyone should be around this length. You know, they were still able to tell their little faux intelligent story, but stay engaging because the verses aren't going on so long they get stale before a chorus or bridge comes in. I probably like this the most so far, only in the way that it's like, this feels like the best song.
Complete.
Yeah.
And like tight and, I get that. Yeah. Mostly that's part of the reason the album is so like over an hour long, if you count the three bonus tracks, is because most of these songs are like 5+ minutes or like 4.5 minutes.
Sure.
Yep. Then we get All Over You.
How is water pinned down and abused for being strange? What does that mean?
I don't know, man.
Nobody knows what it means.
What do any of the lyrics mean in any of
this? I don't know. I just
it's
like,
a good song, but it just feels so pretentious. I just start rolling my eyes.
100%,
I'm like, yeah. It doesn't song, mean anything. Our love is like water. What?
The song went to number 2. Nobody knows why. It is the most whatever song.
Not bad.
It's just got a good
riff. The riff is the only good song part about the song. Everything about the song is terrible.
Yeah, the little breakdown between 225 and 245 is solid.
Sure.
It's not a bad song. It just doesn't make sense.
No, it is a bad song.
I think it's pretty good.
It's not a good
song. It's not my favorite, but it was pretty popular back in the day.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Then we get Shit Town.
It's about living in a poor neighborhood.
We all lived in a crappy town at one point, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I still live there.
I don't know what Weavers are, but I Googled it, and apparently in northeast Ohio, it's a derogatory name for mentally handicapped people.
Wow.
And these guys are from Pennsylvania, which is next to Ohio.
Wow, maybe. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
The song is a little repetitive, but the beat is fun.
Yeah.
I like, gotta get out of that small town, and you gotta live, gotta live in our town.
Gotta live in Shit Town.
So, it's something.
TBD.
Yeah, I like the classic quiet and slow.
It's about the Book of the Dead.
Is it?
It's about the Book of the Dead. That's what TBD stands for. TBD. It's about the Book of the Dead.
Oh, okay.
The Tibetan Book of the Dead. Song.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's slow, but the bass work is good. I like the breakdown at 3 minutes and 30 seconds that leads into the end of the song, but it's so deep into it that, like, man, it took so long to get there because he's just whisper singing for long.
The only reason I bring up it is about the Book of the Dead is because he gave this interview talking about this song, and he's like, it's about how Aldous Huxley's wife read him the Book of the Dead while he was dying from a heroin overdose.
Did Aldous Huxley die of a heroin overdose?
He didn't do that much research.
I lost interest after I heard that it was just like, it's just like nonsense, pretentious nonsense.
Yeah.
Nonsense, pretentious nonsense?
Nonsense, pretentious. Yeah, verse, chorus, verse. Then.
Guess what was popular
pretentious nonsense?
In the mid-90s, especially amongst like
sounding well-read
teenagers and stuff.
TBD?
Yeah.
The Tibetan Book of the Dead?
Catcher in the Rye. And, God.
That book sucks.
Yeah, that book sucks too.
Yeah, it does. But guess what? It was hella popular.
You know what else sucks? The Grapes of Wrath. That book sucks too.
I've never read Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, well, to do the band. I haven't known Grapes of Wrath album.
Oh, that's cool.
Band, is it purple? Band good.
I don't know. Probably not. Up next is another bad song, Stage. I'm not a fan.
I've got no notes.
Doesn't do anything for me lyrically or instrumentally.
Yep.
I was excited for something faster, then I was like, not like this.
Okay, this one like is this. Too loud after the quiet one. It's weird.
This one stays pretty loud.
Who made this track list?
Yeah. All the songs, I don't care about them past this point.
Mm.
Just straight up. I don't care about Waitress, Pillar of Davidson, White Discussion, Horse, like, and then the three bonus tracks.
Listen, I
don't
care
at all. Okay, we'll get there.
We'll get to Waitress in a minute. I just wanted to make a note. The lines about the rock and roll messiah and being known for her child care in the middle of the song. They're about Nirvana.
Cool.
And Courtney Love.
That's crazy.
Nirvana.
It's just it's a jab at them for no apparent reason.
Very cool.
As far as I can tell,
they couldn't fight back.
Yeah.
I guess so. For no apparent reason too, because I'm pretty sure Live was not competing for listeners with Nirvana
at all. There was never a feud that I'm aware of.
It's just weird. Yeah. Anyway.
Up next, Waitress. Let's get into some tipping discourse. I'm on the side that tips should be earned. And only given when you're dining in. I'm tired of tipping for coffee. I'm not tipping takeout.
I fully agree.
I am with the wife that's like, we all got problems.
Yeah.
We all have need to eat food. We all have AIDS. I don't know why they use that as an example. I just thought it was funny how it's just all about the two arguing about if they should tip this waitress.
I actually forgot how much that I like the chorus on Waitress, because I do like the whole, come on, baby, leave some change behind. She was a bitch, but I don't care. It's like, yeah, okay, sure. Tip her. Why not? Yeah,
it's a weird, unnecessary commentary on the waitress-customer relationship.
Yeah.
More than half the song is just vocalizing and instrumentation.
Yeah, it is.
I don't mind it, I guess. There's some fun warping effects, and the main guitar riff is solid. I think I liked it more than the actual parts with all the singing.
Sure.
And it ends with some whistling, which is, I'm a fan.
It's
of.
A choice.
Yeah. It's not bad. It just shouldn't have faded out. They should have talked less, I guess. I don't know.
They should have tipped. Anyway.
Yeah. No, don't tip. Actually, you dined in. You should have
tipped.
Sometimes. Unless it was truly awful.
Yeah. Pillar of Davidson. I hate Pillar of Davidson.
Whoa, what a long buildup.
This song is long, and it feels long.
Two minutes and 30 seconds before the chorus. The chorus is good, though.
6 minutes and 46 seconds long.
It's almost 7 minutes, and it's so boring. And like, yeah, the chorus is okay, but
it's another religious song, because the Pillar of Davidson, isn't that religious?
Probably.
No, I don't think so.
No?
I thought Davidson was something to do with the story of David.
No.
I have no idea.
I mean, the name David isn't Davidson, but Davidson is not a thing.
Yeah.
And there's not many pillars, as far as I'm aware. Maybe if it didn't take ages to get to the chorus, this would have been a solid song. But 2.5 minutes, I was like, woof.
Yep. Way too long. And then we get White, comma, Discussion.
Solid.
It's got a really good bass line. I think it's a pretty good song that I always forget about because it's at the end, and it's also like 6 minutes long, but it's got good vocalization and like good instrumentation, and it goes hard near the end.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
It is not bad. I like the instrumental breakdown around 1:45, and most of the second half of the song where things stay high energy, with shredding and weird samples coming in, keep things fresh. It just feels long. Like, it's not dynamic enough to stop from feeling bored. It does crash out, though. It's like the only one that's like a full on like crash out, and I think that's solid, but it's just, make it 4 minutes.
So every song should have been
still solid but
shorter.
I don't know. We'll have that problem in the next album too, but this one especially feels very, very long.
Horse,
the last song on the album for us.
It's about a girl who owns a horse.
Yeah, I rode a horse under
this
my
is a total
head.
Surprise.
Right? They do like
it's
a
the
full,
best song on the album.
It's like a country song.
Yeah, it's apparently a hidden song. I wonder if it was after Silence
it's
on the CD.
It's not really that hidden.
Right? So I'm wondering if there was hidden in
Yes,
some
they said
release.
It's not really that hidden. They just forgot to write it on the original back of the album.
That's
cover.
What it is. Yeah, total surprise. It feels way different of the twangy guitars and country rock feel.
It's pretty good.
I'd almost written off the album as completely subpar. But this came on and redeemed it a bit. I even put this song on some playlists.
I wonder if you
like
country.
I actually enjoyed this.
I wonder if you like certain like good country albums.
I don't know.
I love country.
We did one kind of country one, didn't we?
Kind of. It was modern country. Yeah.
Modern More sounds jazz. In country and western.
That's
that was country and western though.
Yeah. So there are.
Well, this is western, right? A twanginess.
It's country.
It is a really good song.
I could say it's Western
country.
It's
so catchy.
Sure. Yeah, it's good. And then there's three tracks that we all forgot about because I've never...
Well, we didn't forget about it because we didn't know.
Well, we listened to the original album.
I completely forgot about it. Hold Me Up, We Deal in Dreams, and Susquehanna. Or Susquehanna? I don't know.
Those could have saved the whole album.
Maybe they did, but it also would have made listening time go past an hour.
Well over an hour.
That's okay. As for the physical album itself, it's got this weird album art on the front that I just love. It's like these weirdly drawn people. It's some dude who kind of looks like a missionary. He's like holding his book up to his chest there. And
it's a very familiar art style, but I can't place it. It's like the Stinky Cheese Man books. They're just like weird, surreal.
Yeah, like clay people almost.
Exaggerated. Yeah. It is very odd. It is very appealing.
It's like
there's
a group
something
of,
about
there's
it.
Something about it that I love.
You know how like a group of seven paintings a landscape but more exaggerated?
Yeah.
This is like a painting of a person but more.
If this came out today, you'd say it's AI though.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I could see this being called AI art.
Like, there's something about it.
There's just a bunch of trees in the background. They're on like a cliff. There's a church in the background. Like I said, guy looks like a missionary. And then there's some like, then there's like a prostitute. Because she's dressed really scantily clad. And
that does not make you a prostitute.
I know it doesn't, but based on some of the lyrics. But yeah, she's like holding a stereo and someone's holding like a letter or a wallet.
Apparently
or
the
something.
The original art is like an actual painting and it sold for $186,000.
No way.
That's cool. 2005, which is like $1 billion in today's
that's
money.
Wild.
It might as well be.
The back is just the band going to some creek picnic area. There's a little sign
is
there.
Is it the Otter Creek?
Nope. Oh, it probably is Otter Creek.
Which is in Pennsylvania.
It's just ER Creek. So, yeah, it could be Otter Creek. Vehicles towed at owner's expense. They're all walking away. And then it's got side A, B, C, D track listings with the production credits and all that. And then you open it up and you get a picture of the band in like an empty room.
That's a cool photo.
In like sepia kind of black and white.
Sepia tone.
Yeah. And then on the right, we've got... sorry, it's a big gatefold. Throwing Copper, originally released April 26, 1994, and then a bunch of production credits. Live is also recorded at blah, blah, blah.
So this album,
thanks, reissue
this album
credits.
Came out 3 weeks after Kurt Cobain passed.
So they made that song trashing him, and then he died.
Yeah.
It was like,
what
damn.
Poor timing. It comes with a neat little 12-inch poster or whatever with the band and then a lyrics on the back here. Aside from that, I think it's just a good old double LP.
This is also the first time Ploof has opened this.
Yeah, I've never opened this before. I've seen it for the first time.
Olive.
It's a black record. It does kind of look like it says Olive because it says live, but the...
Oh, no, I just meant the color. But oh. Yeah, it also does look like it says
like
Olive.
It says Olive.
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 Because the hole is right there. And one thing that's nice is the sides are listed and the tracks are listed. I hate when they're missing.
Yeah,
I do too.
I hate when they're all on one side
and you can't figure out
which one is A or B. Yeah.
Totally. Anyway, it's all right. I paid, I don't know, $30 free shipping from Amazon, something like that.
More than reasonable for a double LP.
For a double LP, yeah, it's fine. Especially for like, it's a pretty like well-revered album for the most part, and it was popular.
It was well-reviewed too.
Yeah, it really was. I'm not crazy about it. But it's okay, and it's kind of a part of my history in terms of nostalgia and whatnot. So I was like, yeah, I'll buy a copy of that.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Well, why don't I start with my vinyl verdict? Though I said at the start, I like this era of rock. Or maybe I didn't, because at this point we'd already kind of established I don't. Well, at least last week. I think the problem is that I just like Our Lady Peace so much more than this. And there are several songs that I'm like, this feels like Navid, or this feels like some of their other albums from around that time. I'd much rather be listening to those, or Jars of Clay, or.
I can't wait till we cover Our Lady Peace so I can complain about Rain Maida.
Sure. I don't think there's anything offensively bad about this album. There just isn't really a reason for me to put this on. The last part of this album is probably my favorite, so depending on the splits, I guess it's one, so.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
two? Two records? One? Two? One? Two records? It's one record?
It's two records. Two LPs. He's not listening.
He's locked in right
Sorry,
now.
Sorry, I was looking at something important.
Wow. It was inappropriate photos, let me tell you.
No, it was not
inappropriate photos. Yeah, so depending on the splits, like maybe I'd put something on, but probably not, especially since it's two LPs. I'm putting Throwing Copper by Live in the 26th spot, below In Utero by Nirvana, and above You Void Synthesizer by Machine Girl. It's not bad. It's not great. It's a rock album from the mid-90s. Both are just... good albums of their or fine albums of their genre.
Sure.
They're just standard. I guess this spot is the middle point. It is standard.
Jamie?
Something stinks. It's too long. It's too whiny. It's too religious in some spots. The singles don't do anything for me. But I did like that song Horse at the end.
That's hey. She'll ride a horse into my head.
It's another 6.5 out of 13. See,
we both rated it the exact same.
6.5, yeah, about the same, yeah.
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 For me, it's just a weird and long album. I think they should have picked either stay on the harder or the softer side and cut 3 or 4 songs either way. It's probably like a 6 or a 6.5 for me. I love some tracks, but the rest are really meh. I bought it based on how much I love those individual tracks as well as the weird album art. It's kind of a nostalgic 90s staple. And, you know,
if you had a record wall, this would be good on it.
I think it would. Yeah, it's a great album cover.
It's a conversation piece.
Totally. Yeah. Who's that weird looking guy? I don't know.
It's Ploof.
That's me.
Oh, no, the album.
That's me. Yeah. Bell, we've listened to 2 grunge albums.
Let's listen to a Bell album.
You guys were like, pick a grunge album. I'm like, okay, I'll pick an album I've never listened to. And I picked V by the Horrors. And let me tell you, it is not a grunge album. I'm going to get out of order, which always messes up my intros, but I also very much enjoyed this album. I know I say this almost every week, but I have to say it again. I know this may surprise you, but I've never listened to this band.
Wow.
I've been pitching the topic. albums by artists we've never listened to before. But these two were like, I only own things by, or I've listened to everything I own. So we've never been able to do that episode. Yeah. Also sounds like BS to me, but what do I know? Well, since I knew this episode was coming, I decided to pick this record for today's episode. I bought it at an auction because I thought the cover was cool. And I'd never listened to it even after choosing it. And you know what?
It's cool.
It's cool.
I like it.
It is not what I expected. I picked it thinking that it was going to be a grunge album because, or like more in hardcore. It's got a weird body horror thing.
This is going to be like one of the highest rated albums of this season.
Whoa. I'm so excited. Okay, let me zoom through this intro then. The Horrors are an English rock band from Southend-on-Sea that started, which is in England, or Britain. Wow. I don't know what you call it.
Great Britain.
In 2005, great year. And the band is lead singer Ferris Badwin, keyboard player Tom Furse, guitar player, I'm trying to get through this because I know Jamie likes it. Guitar player Joshua Hayward, drummer Joseph Spurgeon, great name, and bassist Reese Webb. I don't have too much backstory on the band or the album itself, which is a bit surprising because all of their albums have charted on the UK Top 40.
Yeah.
What I can tell you is that V is the Horrors' fifth album, hence the name, and it was released in September of 2017. To critical acclaim. Lots of reviewers gave this album a near perfect score, except for Pitchfork, which gave the album a 7.1 because of hate music, which we all know. Yeah, well,
they hate music.
Pitchfork hates music. And that's pretty much all my preamble, since I can't share about how I discovered the album because I only just listened to it. But I can say I was pleasantly surprised. For a band called The Horrors, I did not expect it to be like industrial and psychedelic pop rock. I guess you just say rock. I feel like a lot of these I kind of try to put pop on it because it's more upbeat, but it's still kind of rock. I also didn't realize how long the songs on the album were.
Yeah.
Like it's long. Like live where like all of them are like 6 minutes long.
Yeah.
But I liked the songs. So yeah. I was like, sweet. They were
good to get through.
It's still going. What did you guys think?
I thought it was a really cool album cover. Kind of reminds me of an Exalted Orb from Path of Exile.
Ooh, I get that.
Sure.
I liked it for the most part. But while I didn't hate how long the songs were, I definitely thought most of them could have been shorter. And then, therefore, the whole album could have been like 5+ minutes shorter, at least. Mm-hmm. But I did like it, like more than I thought. It's just like every now and then I'd be getting through a song and I'd be like, oh God, there's another like 4 minutes or like two.
They are very long. Mm-hmm. The shortest one's 3 minutes and 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. The next one is 4 minutes and 53 seconds. Then 5 minutes. The average length is like 5.5 to 6 minutes.
What's the longest one on the album?
The longest one is 6 minutes and 40 seconds.
Yeah. So it's still shorter than that one that we didn't like from the live album.
Yeah.
Oh, really? So there's ones on live longer? I really did not.
6 minutes and 46 seconds.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, most of them I would have loved. Like, this would have been like an 8 or 9 out of 10 if they were just shorter. Because, like, maybe I was just in the wrong mindset, or maybe it's one of those things where if you put this on in the background, I'd love it. But the fact that I have to like sit there and pay attention and actively write notes and everything, it kind of detracts from the whole like spaciness.
It is a little less special when like all of them have long interludes and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was,
I think I was in the headspace because, this is the third one I reviewed of these three,
mm-hmm.
and I was kind of done. Like I didn't really enjoy Nirvana. I didn't really enjoy Live.
Yeah.
So coming to this and like doing dishes, I was like, oh,
This is quite good.
Is so different, and I really enjoyed it. And because the first listen, at least, I had was doing something else, I was like, oh, yeah, like let's get going. This is good. Jamie, what do you think?
Oh, I love this album. I think this is great. This is their most recent album, too.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the other ones don't sound like this one as much,
mm-hmm.
which means I will never listen to another one of their albums.
I don't think I'm going to either. Yeah, this one is they've been making albums from 2007. And it was like been every 2 years.
So this album came out in 2017 and they've never put out another one.
No, they just released a single recently. Not long ago. Yeah, less than a year ago. So there's probably something new coming, but
certainly, yeah.
The album cover looks like this one too. So I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
maybe this is their new sound.
So all the singles for this album are also weird, have creepy faces.
Digital body horror, which we'll talk about later. But yeah. I agree, they're very cool. There's more to talk about the album cover that I also like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what did you think of the longness, the length of the songs, I guess?
I liked them because they were all very melodic in some way, and they had cool spacey sounds that I was into.
It was like Space Wave. It doesn't stay for every track,
yeah.
But this first song, I was like, whoa, spacey.
Yeah, cool. It's neat.
I like this kind of era of music. You know,
I also listened to this one last, and I think its change of pace really helped its cause. Mm. But I really liked it. I listened to it again after I made all my notes and all that stuff. So I think I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's very, very neat. Since we don't really have too much preamble, why don't we just get right into it?
Sure.
Hologram. Cool intro to the album. Again, not what I was expecting, so I was like, oh, wow, this is
I like this. It starts neat. Off real strong.
Yeah, it's very surreal with the vocals being distorted and used to as like a digital opening. It's digital opening. The vocals being distorted and used as the opening sound to the song before the blaring synths come in.
His voice is really good. It's classy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like neat. A classy Depeche Mode-y kind of.
Kind of. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how laid back it is, but like dark.
Yeah, it's not like a strain to get at the song. It's just like.
And he uses like a talking he uses the same voice for most of the album, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the echoing and overly processed vocals hit just right. And there's a crunchy very synth. Brief guitar feature just after 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's but then it starts screeching like malfunctioning machinery before the vocals come back in and command your attention. And I was just like, man, they're fitting this vibe really well with the instruments. And there's a long instrumental break, which I'm sorry, will be said a lot during this
yeah,
I like that.
Album. But around 3:45, there's like this dotting synth that comes in with some vocalizing and laser noises before a guitar solo at 4:40. Again, this will come up frequently, but there's not a whole lot going on lyrically. It just kind of like says things that kind of fit the vibe.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like loose enough to be like, this makes sense when I'm hearing instrumentally, but like you're not gaining or learning or like you're not going to have these lyrics stuck in your head kind of thing.
No.
I think it's a really good start to this album and it did not feel like 6 minutes.
But no, I liked
it. I was
it.
Also doing something.
It sets a really good pace. It's got a really cool crunchy synth throughout. Oh, God, I like this song.
Yeah, the synth was really good. I thought that around 3:45 it could have just ended, and
sure.
I would have been perfectly fine with it. It was it. I liked it, and at this point, since that you know this is the first song, I'm like, okay, this is fine, I can dig it. But then it happens, like Bell said, on like almost every track, and so by the end of the album, I just kind of got tired of the whole like it was a little formulaic, and that they like do a bunch of cool stuff, and then have this weird instrumental break for a while, and then come back for something cool. But yeah, I did like Hologram. Quite a bit. I couldn't originally decide if I was into it, but the longer it went on, the more I was like, yeah, this is neat, and I like it.
Yeah.
It almost feels like this needs like a radio edit version of them.
Totally. Oh my God. I think if this had a radio edit version where everything was cut back and like shortened,
you know
it would be fan. It would be
you know
great.
How remixes usually make the song longer and more drawn out?
Do the opposite.
What if the remixes made the song shorter and more cohesive?
Honestly, I don't think it'd take much effort, and they probably would be some radio hits here.
Yeah.
Because like, I can't imagine this got played on the radio a ton. Well, I guess it charted, but I coun't imagine.
Yeah, four singles released from it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Up next is Press Enter to Exit,
which was one of the singles.
It's a fun title.
Yeah, I like it as well. It's a different vibe compared to the last one. It's still digital, but it's more psychedelic.
Yeah.
The vibe is immaculate. Again, not a whole lot going on lyrically. It just feels like a way to use the vocals almost as an instrument.
The clean guitar at the beginning is really
good. Yeah, I really like the guitar riff quite a bit. I think that the outro goes on way too long.
Yo, it's got a fake fade out.
And then
after the fade out, it does a solo.
The solo's really good.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's what bothers me so much. It's like, I hate all these instrumental breaks because they come back with really cool endings most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is actually one where I was like, I'm not as on board with the long outro.
Sure.
I did like the kind of fake out and the solo. But like if you just brought that solo earlier and just cut off some of that instrumental, I'd be like, yeah,
way better.
That probably is better. But it's fine.
Yeah.
It's a fine outro. After that's Machine. It's a single. It was the first single released, actually.
I
wrote that.
Really don't like The Machine that much.
It's not my favorite.
It has a Jurassic Park reference in it.
Does it?
Yeah, because it's I'm just an insect in the amber.
Yeah.
You know, that's not explicitly a Jurassic Park reference.
Probably what he's talking about.
That
just
happened in Jurassic Park, yeah. I assume. Yeah, I like that the volume and aggression builds up over the song. I just think it's too slow to do that.
Yeah.
I really would have liked if the vocals became more and more yelly.
Totally.
With the instruments becoming louder, but it's pretty much just that the guitars and drums get louder over 3.5 minutes until there's a short solo and things die down. Then they kind of ramp it up again, and then the song ends.
Yeah,
it's a weird ending. I was like, not my favorite. The lyrics are about living in a computer simulation that's almost lifelike. I like some of the descriptions about the slightly off-world, like how the lights have no heat. And he says they're like an insect trapped in amber, and they'll never be more than a machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting imagery, but yeah, I don't know. I was just like, it's getting louder, but he's still singing the same.
Yeah.
Which feels like there's a little bit of dissonance there.
Mm-hmm.
After that?
Ghost.
This was also not for me. The slower track, it's just kind of simple and boring, and then it goes on for 5.5 minutes.
Oh, I kind of liked how it was simple.
I don't know. The really frenetic part, like on the last quarter, is really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the last quarter of this song, but it just, by the point, you know, that it takes to get there, I've lost interest.
I also thought the intro was a little boring, but when it kind of finally bursts, I was
great.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I think it's around 3 minutes and 20 seconds. There's, like, all of a sudden these digital swirling sounds,
it's fantastic. Drumming
synths and hard drums that are so good. I think if they chopped off a solid like minute and a half or 2 minutes of the intro,
it'd be fine.
It would be really, really good. I still got pulled into that part and enjoyed the song, but I'm like, I shouldn't have to like wait for that. I don't know if it like it added a whole lot by being like edging me until it finally happened.
Yeah.
But the vocals are also raw in a way that I didn't enjoy in the first part. But again, when the things finally start to happen and it's like he's right in your ear, I was like, okay, now I like it. So this one was mixed. Overall positive, though. After that, point of no reply.
There's a cool string synth in the background. Mm. Sounds like, I don't know.
It sounds like reverse.
Yeah.
Something playing in reverse. It's very odd.
I like it.
This was kind of the same thing where I really like the big final act. It just takes too long to get there. I thought that the quieting down and then the low bass line before the spooky vocals and low synths was pretty cool.
Yeah, this one feels like a 2017 rock song. Like, this feels pretty standard for the late 2010s. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's kind of nice to get a traditional song after so many experimental feeling songs. I like the chorus and how layered all the instruments are with different drones and synths fading in and around the vocals. And even though it's more traditional, there's still 2 minutes of instrumental at the end. If you don't like that at this point, you're not going to like this album. Like, you got to like the droning or the instrumentals or not. I like the mix of this traditional sound with the instrumental.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. That's what I was going to say.
Way down.
I like the bass line.
Yeah, this one is interesting. The vocals feel a bit different. They're deeper. It almost sounds like the lead singer of the Arctic Monkeys. It's got a kind of it does shift down like an octave. And I enjoy it. I think it feels similar to the last song, but not so similar. I'm feeling bored. I think it probably would have benefited from being spaced out a little bit from the last song because it's like kind of two traditional songs back to back. I like this one quite a bit more though. The instrumental half feels like I feel like it's balanced a bit better between the traditional rock song and the instrumental. And it's more unique because the vocals are more prominent in the instrumental song or section. So even when it's just vocalizing the psychedelic vibe of it, I think it's just like so solid.
This was the point in the album where I started to feel like every song was an outro to an album. Hmm. Like every track is like a final track on an album to me.
Interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting take. I thought, I'm not sure what the effect pedal that they use at the beginning was. It's like a chorus pedal or something like that. I'm not sure, but it sounded really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the bass part after the beginning is really cool too. And then he's got Depeche Mode's style vocals again.
Yeah. I like the little bit of wavering and echoing in the intro. It is a really cool sounding song.
Yeah.
After that's Gathering, another banger of a more traditional song. I feel like it uses the length a little bit more meaningfully. It's unique because it uses acoustic guitars and piano instead of electric guitars and synths. And apparently if you believe Genius at least, this is the band's first foray into using an acoustic guitar in a song.
Interesting.
That's weird,
again, too. I haven't listened to the other albums, but I was like, huh.
I really like the acoustic guitar, so they made a good choice, I guess.
It's mm-hmm. got more synth strings, too.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. very dreamy, like the choruses and everything. And things kind of constantly build up, and then it ends. Like, yeah. It doesn't build up and then drop back down and then build up. It just ends. Constantly building up through the entire thing. I was like, oh, yeah, keep it going. They're still building up. Like, keep it going. I liked getting lost in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a interesting choice for them to do all these, like, louder ones, and then it's just like, here's an acoustic one. Mm. Anyway, here's Wonderwall.
Pretty much. It just got to feel like that, where it's like, okay, here's something for your sibling. But I like it a lot. After that is World Below.
World Below,
a short song.
A little faster pace.
This one's great. This was easily, like, my favorite song on the album.
Wow.
It's got a very, like, modern 80s vibe. I liked how shorter it was. The chorus is all right. Easy to sing along to. It's upbeat. Yeah, it's, I don't know. This is just, yeah, good song.
My only problem is that it feels like a weird transition from the floaty acoustic vibe of Gather to the intensity of World Below.
I agree.
What can you do? It's the shortest by far. It's a radio-friendly unit shifter, as a kid say.
It sure is.
It's the Jamie say.
It is solid. Even if it's shorter, they still find a way to squeeze in a weird 15-second instrumental at the end, just so you know it's a horror song. They're like, here's some weird little thing.
Here's a little something for ya.
They proved that they can make a normal-length song. They probably should have done it more than once, but I do really like this. I do really like this. Any thoughts, Jamie?
No, I like this song. It's faster pace. It's the shortest by a long margin, or wide margin, rather. I think it's fun. I think I enjoyed it. I don't know if it was my favorite on the album.
Yeah.
But I liked it.
Mm-hmm. After this is It's a Good Life. I was able to find a backstory on this one.
Oh.
It's about Ferris's ex-girlfriend, Peaches Geldof, who died of a heroin overdose in 2014.
Wow. She was the daughter of Bob Geldof from the Boomtown Rats.
I have no idea who that is.
You know the song I Don't Like Mondays?
No.
You've never heard the song I Don't Like Mondays?
No.
Really? Okay, anyway, Bob Geldof did all the... any of those concerts that end in Aid?
Oh, yeah.
It's Bob.
Like Live Aid. And
yeah, Live Aid, Live Earth.
Yeah.
That was when we were in college.
End in Aid.
Yeah, oh, whatever. But that's all Bob's stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read more about her, and it's sad because her mom died of a heroin overdose when she was 11.
Dang.
She repeated the same thing and then left behind two sons. It's another more restrained song with the lyrics being very clear and prominent with the pulsing synths that play throughout the first part. Slowly fading out, allowing for piano and harpsichord, maybe, to overtake with the emotional vocals, calling out how good life is and how you just need to hold on to make it through it. It's very powerful. I think knowing the story behind it made me like it more. Again, I prefer the later half of the song where it just gets into that instrumental groove. I was just able to be like, like,
it's a weirdly,
life is good.
It's a weirdly sad song. Like, her story is tragic. Mm-hmm. What's even more tragic is that they searched for the people that sold her heroin for years.
Yeah, because apparently, because she had just gotten out of like a methadone clinic, so rehab, and then the stuff that she got was insanely pure.
Yeah,
like, it was like instead of 20% purity as you would get on the street, it was like 70.
That's why most people, I don't know about most, but a lot of people overdose because they get clean and then they go back to using and they go back to their original dose that they were doing before they got clean and their tolerance is gone.
Yeah, they were not able to find the person at all after so many years.
That's like Andy Dick and Keanu Reeves' girlfriend.
No, it was wasn't it Andy Dick and what's-his-face's wife? It wasn't Keanu Reeves, it was...
Oh, the guy who plays Hartman, Phil Hartman. Yeah, like, you're right. Yeah, that's my bad. Yeah, because she was clean, and then Andy Dick showed up to a party and was like, "Hey, you want to do some
smack?"
Yeah.
Classic. So. It's just like that.
Yeah.
Andy Dick killed Peaches Geldof.
Probably.
Andy Dick.
He sucks.
Sucks. Yeah. Anyway.
But I love this song. It's sad. It's also hopeful. It's very good.
Cool. Yeah. Keanu Reeves' girlfriend died in like a car accident on the way home from a party or something. Right?
Something like that.
Keanu Sorry. Reeves. Yeah.
His sad life. And also, he was his wife.
His wife, even worse. Yeah.
Something to Remember Me By.
I like the chorus quite a bit. I think the backing track is okay. Like the keyboards, gets a little repetitive.
I think they should switch this and end it on It's a Good Life. But it's not a huge deal. I think the mix of some more traditional rock to their industrial song is good. Like, I think they mix it really well here.
Yeah,
you know, it's a positive summery vibe. It's just basic. It kind of feels like another one of those just traditional songs they're doing because somebody wants it. But it's good. Like, that does not make it a bad thing. I'm not a huge fan of the instrumental part that starts around 3:30. There's lots of digital wind noises and stuff being stripped away by the instruments. It almost sounds like it's in a low-pass filter or something.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like they're kind of just messing around to mess around and not necessarily add to the song. But then everything kind of comes crashing back in. They repeat the chorus for another minute and a half, and I like that section. It's a fine song. It just would have been cool to end with that emotional weight of, like, loss and, you know, succumbing to your addiction. And then it's just like, summer! It just feels a little odd. Do you two have any thoughts?
No, I agree with you.
I said mine at the start.
So no thoughts?
No, I said I like the chorus, and you know, the backing track's okay. Like, the keyboards gets repetitive.
Well, guess what?
Let's get into what it looks like.
Thank you. I was going to wait. We've been teasing it. So this is what the front cover looks like. You see it on your screen, and have for the last while, I guess. But it's got a bunch of gooey faces in pink, like what they make McDonald's chicken nuggets out of.
It looks like a bubble gum.
Yeah, it's like chewed gum, but it's a bunch of faces. It could be a Muse album, that one with the faces in rock that's really bad.
Yeah.
And it's got a fake Obi strip on it. It says The Horrors and a bunch of Japanese. It looks very, very cool. I thought it was an Obi strip when I saw pictures of it in the auction, and it is not. They fooled me. But it's a very cool cover. And the back is just white with the other half of the Obi strip. And the names of the songs in Japanese and then English to the right of it. Wow. Point of No Reply is in red font and the rest are in blue. I don't know why. Point of No, I guess that's the half point.
I think that's the break, yeah.
Well, it's a double LP. So that's the end of side B.
Oh, weird.
So it's just like a random
one. Oh, it's like really short sides, eh?
Well, the songs are long.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. That's true. Yeah.
So you couldn't fit it all anyway. So I guess they were just like, ah, screw it. Put it all in different ones. But yeah, very cool. On the inside, the gatefold is close-ups of the gooey faces. Very high def.
Looks like Plouffe picking his nose.
It's a very glossy album. It looks cool. And then the record sleeves are...
Oh, look, it's got busts. Look, they're busts.
Yeah, it's got like LiDAR scanned busts. And then it's got like 90s future fonts. And
it's like Blade Runner future stuff.
They're the lyrics for some of the songs.
Hologram.
Very Blade Runner, very cool looking. The other one is the same thing, just the different songs. It's the albums themselves are black and have cool, again, retro future designs on half and then face goo.
The other one's blue, right? Like the label is blue on it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's in the record player right now, so I can't confirm, but it is.
Oh, confirmed. It is blue.
And it says side A and side B on the labels with all the tracks, but it says this side and other side. So you know which side is side A and what side is side B. Very, very cool package. Sounds good. Plays good. Thank goodness. It is like a little, I think one of the sides is a little warped, but luckily my record player is good enough that I can play it.
Yeah, a little bit of warping is okay.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Jamie's going to beg me to let him flatten it.
No, it's fine. I got it out of the flattening.
Please let me flatten it.
Please let me do it. Please. Please, please, please.
I don't remember how much I paid for it. I want to say it was like $10 or $15.
That's pretty good.
Perfect. Yeah. This album is worth it. I looked it up. It costs way more than that.
Really?
Yeah.
Stonks, baby. Shout out to the local.
It's no longer available as well.
Yeah, their store is nothing. I think it's a order for their next album is the only thing on their store.
That's cool.
I guess I should pre-order it because this is very good. But Plouffe, you got a picture on your computer.
That's the Exalted Orb from Path of Exile. You see the similarities?
It looks like one of the masks from Elden Ring. One of those wizard masks. You know, you can get
it. Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think it looks like the album cover. Anyway.
What's your final verdict?
It's so all over the place with this one. It's like I love it to a fault, but then I just... God, it's too long. It's almost every song. I think that if I wasn't making notes and it was in the background while I was doing dishes or like just relaxing or whatever, I think I would absolutely love this album. If I listened to it on my own time without having to like pay too much attention, I think I would rate it way higher. Like at the end, just like ask me, how'd you feel about that? An hour later, I'd be like, oh, that was great. Real fun experience. But as is, I like kept zoning out. The instrumental breaks were too frequent and too long. I really like what they're trying to do, but then they just, they do some things too much. I don't know. I would probably never elect to put it on as is, especially knowing that, like, it's a double LP for an hour. So while the songs are long, Jamie's right, those are probably a little short on the sides. It's probably good for the background, but then you'd have to flip it constantly. So I don't know. It's a cool record and a really cool, like, I love just gatefolds in general. God, I'm so torn. 7 out of 10. I like it more than the other albums we listened to today, but it's just like, it could be condensed. Like you said, they should make like a radio edit of this album. And I think it'd be like an 8 or a 9, if not a 10.
My thoughts, completely different than Plouffe's. I like this album. I tried to seek it out. There's a couple of people selling it on Discogs. It's going for a bunch of money. When I say a bunch, I mean it's more than I want to pay.
Mm-hmm.
It's going for like $40 plus $50 in shipping. I'm like, why would I pay more for shipping? Yeah. I like this album. It's probably the second highest, if not the highest, I'll rate for this year. For no other particular reason than I enjoyed it,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a good reason to rate something high. I'm going to call it a 12 out of 13.
Wow.
12?
Yeah.
Let's you go, really baby. Liked it.
Sheesh. This is probably going to be like your highest.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I did too. 12. What do you think is up? What else is up there?
I don't even know.
I don't even remember what not, we Jamie doesn't Modern rate Sounds of Country and Western Music?
Yeah, Jamie doesn't rate a lot of stuff past like 11.
Yeah.
Even a 10 is like pretty high for you.
I like this more than a lot of things we've listened to in the last 2 years. I think it somehow it resonated with me.
So, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
And let's wander into yours.
Whoa. Okay.
Are you still writing it?
No, I thought you were going to
segue
out.
No, let's wander right into your review.
Well, guess what?
Uh-oh.
I picked this album.
I know.
I think it's pretty darn good. I have to say, I like this way more than I thought I would. I don't know what I expected, but I didn't expect to be like, this is fantastic, and I'm glad I own this. It makes me want to go listen to other records I have by artists I've never listened before, because like I said, it's a lot. I guess I've listened to a lot of the artists and some of the albums, but yeah. I haven't listened to records
Maybe you're themselves. Just leaving stuff on the table, so to speak. Like, yes. By not listening to them.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. On the player. No, off the...
Off the
we'll workshop it.
Beaten track.
I frequently complain about songs feeling too long, but this album uses most of their songs' lengths to experiment with changing up the defining sounds of a song as much as possible while staying true to the vibe and atmosphere they were originally aiming for. I definitely would not widely recommend this to everyone, but if you're looking for an album to get lost in and like the industrial pop rock era of the late 2010s, this could be for you. I'm putting this album in the 8th spot, under Alchemy by Disclosure and above High Fidelity by REO Speedwagon. This has been a weird year for album choices.
Yeah, sure.
It feels like I used to like, or like, I guess they used to view albums by like how many songs on it I enjoyed. But this one, I was like, there's not a whole lot of standout songs that I put on playlists. Like, there definitely were a couple. But like the entire thing I actually did enjoy as a whole.
The vibe is immaculate.
The vibe is immaculate. And I really ended up enjoying my time with it. It'll be interesting to see what happens at the end of the year when we do like the re-reviewing and stuff like that. And
the way this album resonated with me is the way the first 4 tracks on Walking on a Dream resonated with me. They had me. They had me, and then they lost me. But this album just held me.
And sometimes you need to be held.
Yeah, I like the warm embrace of another human.
Well, guess what? We're doing another album next week. That's kind of like a warm embrace. And also kind of like a cold embrace. Peace or Love by Kings of Convenience.
Now you gotta choose.
You do.
Yeah, it's not Peace and Love.
This kind of feels, that actually, it feels like it actually, I never really thought about it. That title really fits this album. We'll talk more about why. But it is a good spring album, I think.
I thought it was a late fall album.
Sure.
Okay.
Wow.
It depends on it's a glass half full or half empty kind of thing.
Yeah.
Plouffe, do you have anything to add about next week's album?
I want to talk about it next week. I don't want to spoil it too much.
Well, listen to it. Peace or Love, Kings of Convenience. Thank you for listening over the last hour and a half.
It's been an hour and a half.
Yeah, it sure has been.
Three
those
long
topics.
Albums.
Three albums, you know, it always kind of happens.
If you skipped,
this might be our shortest topic, though. We had one that was over 2 hours.
If you skipped right to now, you missed discount code for HelloFresh that was so many deep in there.
So many discount codes.
Throwback
back there.
To our guest 4 weeks ago, I guess. See you next week.
Goodbye.